Bressel in Carmel, California, December the 14th, 1979, tape number 419A, that side one. Amnesty International came out with their report on human rights abuses in 1979 and listed areas around the world where there were various arrests, disappearances, imprisonments, and mentioned the Soviet Union that had political dissidents that are still sent to psychiatric institutions. Pravda answered that this week with a charge that the United States should look in its own backyard, that Jimmy Carter has political assassinations and political murders in the United States. I thought that was interesting because the Soviet Union has been very quiet about the assassinations in this country. They went on to say that the International Human Rights Day was a mockery, considering the murdering of political opponents in the United States. And the article said, how do millions of U.S. blacks, Americans of Mexican descent, American Indians, reduced to the position of second-rate citizens, see their life? What do more than 6 million unemployed people think about the right to happiness? The article goes into the killing of Puerto Rican activists recently and the hanging in the jail of an activist that set off the shooting down in Puerto Rico last week on the Navy bus. It refers to these shootings and goes on to say that the United States has, in quotes, thousands of political crimes which are committed by the FBI and, in point of fact, by the government of the United States under the cover of talks of human rights. So that Pravda was answering Jimmy Carter and saying, your opponents at election time are killed. You murder your political opponents in the United States, and even the FBI is involved in the assassinations. I do think in time that the Soviet Union will get more vocal about the assassinations in the United States if we keep slandering their particular activities. I'm not implying that the Soviet Union is perfect or their justice system is perfect, but I do know that their intelligence operations certainly know about Yuri Nosenko and Lee Harvey Oswald and Marina Oswald and the connecting links of the Navy intelligence to our political assassination of John Kennedy alone. But I often felt that the factor keeping them from getting any global confrontation with us, at least to this point, would be blackmail on the various assassinations. And I just think it's interesting that it's coming out at this time. There's one article that was of interest, and I want to share it with you before we go back to the Iranian subject. In fact, there are four or five articles I want to update with you. This one has to do with microwave ovens and radio telescopes, in case any of you have them. I'm sure my listeners to these tapes don't have microwave ovens, but some that listen to the tapes on radio programs might have them or think of getting them. Jodrell Bank is an observatory in England, and they're complaining, the astronomers at this powerful radio telescope at Jodrell Bank, that microwave ovens being used in home kitchens in England are destroying the radio frequencies. They said, in quotes, the seals around the doors of such ovens have a tendency to leak microwaves that are outside the frequency band reserved for microwave ovens by international agreement. The leading microwaves have a frequency identical to several protected radio bands for radio astronomers and for radio waves emitted from celestial objects, and that these spurious emissions from the microwave ovens present a serious danger to radio astronomical researchers. I'm reading this. It's a report from a magazine that just came out recently on the problems at Jodrell Bank, and they were saying that even a microwave oven a half a mile from this center in Great Britain, this powerful radio telescope observatory place in Great Britain, would interfere with their waves. And even a microwave oven a mile or 15 miles to Jodrell Bank interferes with their telescopes and their range and their use of the radio and the installations and the communication systems. Now, if there's that much leaking from a microwave oven that's affecting something so remote in space that even a single microwave oven 15 miles from the telescope is changing the emissions that are coming through that radio because of the microwave oven leaking, I wonder what in the world these ovens are doing to human beings or how much is getting into their body. It said Jodrell Bank is concerned about the use of ovens in the vicinity. I wonder if the real story will be out within the next few years of what these microwave ovens can do to human beings if they're leaking that much that they're affecting communications with space just through the radio waves at Jodrell Bank. For those of you that don't have my tapes on Alternative 3, you have a list of suggested subjects in the past that I've done. You might update the tapes that I have, and I just want to mention for those of you that have the book Alternative 3 or do have the tapes, there was an article in the Los Angeles Times Thursday, December the 6th, Industry in Space, It's Only a Question of Time, and the article is about the globe with its overpopulation, too many people to feed, again, and the space will be the frontier for aluminum, titanium, iron, and silicon. And it refers again to Gerard O'Neill, the scientist from Princeton, who's building these space colonies. And the article goes on to say the question is not whether space can be industrialized, but how soon it will happen. And this article is about the space colonies and using them for the overpopulated Earth. I thought it was interesting that this week the President of the United States and his wife were involved with a new commission to double the effort to feed the world starving. Now, the years that Jimmy Carter's been president, all this human rights talk was a lot of baloney. There's been more repressions, more murders, more killing and silencing of people around the world, more bloodshed going on constantly as he talks of human rights. And now he has a new commission on world hunger, and I hope that that commission doesn't coincide with Gerard O'Neill at Princeton, because the whole theory behind the space colony is to relieve the Earth of 80% of its population and put them up there to work and make these microwaves that will come back to the Earth for energy and be using the minerals that are up in the moon and other places up in space. A 250,000 miles up between Earth and the moon will become an economic development zone. And this is in the Los Angeles Times, and it describes various space persons that have gone into the industrialization, and it begins with Wernher von Braun in 1952, who proposed a space station that housed 80 people, and then in 1967 they developed an orbital hotel, and in 1974 the space colony idea got moving, thanks to Gerard O'Neill. This is a long article on a space colony coming out just at the same time that the President of the United States has his commission for the world starving, and the whole theory of the space colonies is to eliminate the world of these masses of people and get rid of them up there in the space colonies. Representative Leo Ryan's son asked members of the House Foreign Affairs Committee to conduct a thorough investigation into how Leo Ryan died and how the death took place down at People's Temple. And he refers to reports that were issued by the State Department and the Foreign Affairs Committee, and that no hearings have been held to investigate this matter. And it's an interesting thing. He said in an interview following his speech, Ryan said he believes the tragic events of Guyana could have been avoided if the State Department and the Justice Department had acted on complaints of the People's Temple that date back to 1972. Now, those are the years where I said People's Temple began, when the leasing began around 1972 or 73 is when they first sent the first people down there. And there were already complaints about them, and on other tapes on Jonestown, I linked it to the UCLA school to study the causes of violent behavior, that they were going to use human beings, poor blacks, Mexicans, Indians, for medical experimentation. Incidentally, the man that Dr. Jolly West, who runs at UCLA school, he's the head of the neuropsychiatric department at UCLA, but was to run this study for the causes of violence. He was on television this week with interviews regarding brainwashing of the hostages in Iran. He's used for all kinds of government military opinions on brainwashing, And Dr. Jolly West was stopped at UCLA from his projects, which I have on earlier tapes. And I believe that Jonestown was moving the UCLA School of Experimentation down to Guyana. And it's interesting that Leo Ryan's son says that the problems began with complaints going back as early as 1972, that the State Department and the Justice Department totally ignored, and he feels if they had the true information on what the early complaints were, they would find out how his father died and why he was sent down there to die. The Hell's Angels trial is going on in California now. That's a complicated trial of 18 people in a federal court. At one time, Sonny Barger of the Hell's Angels was used as an agent provocateur to set up violence at the Aldemont concert of the Rolling Stones, and they made a movie, Gimme Shelter, where a gentleman was killed right on camera, a Mr. Meredith, and Sonny Barger had worked with alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. And at the course of their trial, which is going on in San Francisco for murder and drug and all kinds of narcotics dealing and so forth, these 18 Hell's Angels, one defense attorney that they have, a Mr. Archuleta, Ray Archuleta, didn't show up last week because he was found in the bathtub. He was dizzy and had passed out, and he didn't show up in court. And the judge scolded him and said, you better be there the next day. We don't believe a word of what you're saying. And a few days later, after this defense lawyer said he had a concussion from a fall in his home, his brother was killed in an automobile accident on Skyline Boulevard up near San Francisco. And his brother, the paper said, was an electrician for Bethlehem Steel Corporation. But the interesting thing in the San Francisco Chronicle account of the death of the brother of the defense attorney was that it said police contacted an agent for Treasury Department's Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, which notified attorney Ray Archuleta, 34, of the accident when his brother was killed when he arrived in federal court yesterday morning. Now, I have tape recordings of conversations procured by Larry Shears of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms when Sonny Barger was working for them as an assassin or a potential assassination team to wipe out people like Eldridge Cleaver and Cesar Chavez. And it's interesting that the defense attorney for the Hell's Angel had a near miss where he almost died this week. But when his brother died, the Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, the same agency that had hired Sonny Barger and the Hell's Angels at one time, were the people that informed him of his brother's death. You'd think that ordinary police would call him and go to his home, or other law enforcement people, members of the family, but they specified that agents of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms notified the attorney. So in some way, the defense attorney and Sonny Barger and Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms are still involved in protecting the Hell's Angels and maybe get them off the hook. They're still involved with that family that's defending them. And it's interesting that the name of that agency comes out because I've said on the radio and other tapes that Sonny Barger himself worked for that agency. The Pope is cracking down. He had his council where he's missing $20 million a year, and the cardinals went home. Now there's an article in the Washington Post this last week. Vatican shows sign of a crackdown on intellectual freedom. The Polish Pope has made his trip to the United States. He has been linked to organized crime. His bank's linked to 3 deaths in Italy and to Mr. Sindona, and that trial still isn't going through. It's very quiet in New York. Taking of money, manipulation of millions of dollars of private money and Vatican money is still in limbo. But the Pope is showing his fangs now, just as Jimmy Carter is showing his, and he is cracking down, according to the Washington Post and New York Times, on what they call intellectual freedom. He's having a trial, a Holy Inquisition, the Office of the Holy Inquisition, for the first time this last week on Edward Shillabu, I don't know if I pronounced that right, but I'll spell it for you on the sheet of paper, a theologian, and they're having a secret trial of the Holy Inquisition, and then he's checking out another theologian who is under examination, a Jesuit priest, Reverend William Callahan, who's been disciplined, and he's asked to crack down, as it says, on intellectual freedom. The New York Times has a report, Jesuit chief at Pope's request, orders an end of their shortcomings. This is Robert Blair Kaiser. And shortcomings means being liberal, being secularized, being involved in, quotes, political and social issues, the church's involvement. The Jesuits, some of them have gotten involved in political and social issues. And Pope John Paul II is now beginning to show his little fascist fangs, and he is cracking down on various members of the church, as I say, reviving the Holy Office of the Inquisition and convening with theological trials, which haven't been done. And the newspaper, the New York Times, said the very idea of such a trial has a chilling effect on theologians who profess an ethical commitment to assume a critical posture towards their own beliefs. And the purpose of these trials is to shut them up and quit their liberalizing and get back in the fold, so that he is cracking down on them and intends to be very rigid. I'm sure that the facade, this smiling pope that kisses all the babies and kisses the ground, is a very extreme right-wing pope and not the kindly, friendly man, that the image that he tries to portray. So it's interesting that the newspapers now are covering articles about the sternness of his political position. There's an article in the Dallas Morning News, November 22nd, the anniversary of John Kennedy's death, talking about the House Select Committee on Assassinations. And the title of the article by Earl Goltz is "The Public Once Again in Dark on Assassinations." But one of the most disgusting stories, this was carried in the news in Texas, not out here, was that when the House Select Committee on Assassinations completed their $6 million investigation into Kennedy's assassination, which is the second investigation, first the Warren Report in 1964 and this report in 1979, the committee put a 50-year secrecy lid on the testimony reports and other documents that they've collected from private researchers and their own hearings, and they've locked all of this up, and they've published 25 volumes and a final report, but they have piles of information that's locked away for 50 years, restricted automatically for 50 years not to be released, and this is kept from various people, the testimony of very important witnesses that would probably prove that a conspiracy existed. G. Robert Blakey was chief counsel of this committee to investigate the assassination of John Kennedy and Martin Luther King, Reverend Martin Luther King. And there's a quotation. He says, in quotes, "He is sure the critics are uptight about the restrictions." Critics, meaning writers and researchers who've been investigating these assassinations. Robert Blakey said, in quotes, "They would have preferred to have gotten immediate access to everything." Immediate access. This is Robert Blakey, now a professor at Cornell University Law School. He was before, and he went back there. And the answer is they will if they are historians and if they live long enough. I'm 57. That means I'd be 107 before I'd get to see some of that. And I'm sure there are no five-year-olds around now that are interested in the Kennedy assassination or in Martin Luther King's murder at this time. The article tells how all of this has been locked up for 50 years, and then it goes on to say that there's no index, even of witness testimony, the witnesses that they called, so that we know which witnesses were called before the committee. Their report doesn't have an index like the Warren Report did of the witnesses who were called. And Blakey said there was a central index for every document the committee used, and it's a shame, but it's accompanying the restricted material, and it's out of reach of the public. It's in the National Archives. So when historians come, if they ever do, and I don't know if they will really care 50 years from now about this particular committee, this is what Blakey said, it's locked up. And also locked up is the information about Lee Harvey Oswald's trip to Mexico City. Mexico City area was very important. And also sealed away for 50 years is an interview with Will Fritz. He was head of the homicide responsible for the investigation of the murder of John Kennedy, the man who closed the case Sunday evening, the same night that Lee Harvey Oswald was murdered by Jack Ruby. This material, Will Fritz, has been locked up for 50 years. He was called, evidently, by the House Select Committee, and whatever he had to say is locked up and other important information. So whatever the House Select Committee had on the assassinations, it will not be available to us. It's locked up for 50 years, and it would take some order of Congress to open the seal from the records. The clerk would have to have the Rules Committee remove the seal from these records. I really think that this country is pathetically stupid and in the control of the hands of a few people. And this information, as I say, came from the Dallas Morning News. It wasn't in any of the other wire services around the country, that nobody will have access to this information for 50 more years. The Washington Post ran a story December the 4th, 1979. I didn't have a time to put on my tapes the last few weeks about the CIA testing biological warfare in New York on the streets of New York. It involved open-air biological tests in 1955 and 1956. Unknown substances from aerosol devices were put in suitcases, and also in the exhaust of a specially built 1953 Mercury automobile plant. This was part of the CIA's mind control experiment programs, and they were testing biological warfare experiments. This one was called Operation Big City. That was the code name, and since that time, the CIA has destroyed or hidden from classification a lot of this information. Part of this has been declassified through the Freedom of Information Act and given to the Scientologists, the church that has been prosecuted recently for infiltrating the federal government. But I think we need them and should support their efforts. Five of their top officials have been arrested. But they got a hold of reports from the Special Operations Division at Fort Detrick, Maryland, of mind and medical body tests that were done from 1949 to 1968 and then up through the 70s. That one I talked about on a tape a few weeks ago or months ago was over the Golden Gate Bridge in 1950, where they had biological warfare, and then there was another testing over Utah, the clouds, for delirium. And this other paper that's been declassified, as I say, is called Operation Big City. And in the tailpipes of Mercury automobile, they had an extra 18 inches that was filled, I guess, with some chemical. It extended 18 inches from the tailpipe. And then they put chemicals to, I guess, catch the reaction of people or to see if they were contaminated. And the results of this kind of operation have never been disclosed, but I wonder if there's any incidence of cancer or mental disease from people that were close to these chemicals during this time period. That's quite a long time period in 1955 and 1956 to be riding around with this mercury and spraying people. Operation Big City, it was called. Now I want to spend the rest of the time on this tape, on this side and on the other side, on the Shah of Iran and the Iranian problem, some very interesting articles coming out. And I want to bring up the idea with you that I'm going to lead to is that the Shah of Iran is possibly, he's not just here for humanitarian reasons because he was sick. There's the possibility that he's actually kept a prisoner at the army base, and the reason he can't go to Argentina or Panama or South Africa is that the United States is not going to let him out of their hands. There is the possibility that more is involved. We know that much more is involved than meets the eye or the mind. And accumulating in the newspapers are little pieces and clues to the puzzles. And I want to throw a few of these out to you and see how you feel about them. Henry Kissinger was on Dick Cavett two nights, an interview with Dick Cavett, last Thursday, December the 6th. And Kissinger was talking about Watergate, and he was bragging about the fact that when Richard Nixon's mind was faltering, Dick Cavett asked him, weren't you worried that he would flip or go over the deep end and lose his mind? And Kissinger went on to say that when Nixon's mind was faltering, when he was almost on the verge of going out of his mind, I ran the country, he said in quotes. I ran the country. I made the foreign policy. Now that, the period of 72, 73, it was in the summer of 72 when the men were caught at Watergate. And what happened when they were caught at Watergate and that tape was left on the door and Richard Nixon began to fall down, in came General Haig and Henry Kissinger to hold the place together until in 1973, just the time that Nixon is faltering, Mr. Brzezinski and David Rockefeller have gone down to the South to get Jimmy Carter from Annapolis, the graduate of Annapolis, to be their next president of the United States. So it seems that the Watergate story, and you read the Iranian story, and I'm going to try to tie this together, involves Kissinger and Rockefeller, the demise of Nixon, the putting in of Carter, and holding now the Shah of Iran as captive to protect the investments in the Chase Manhattan Bank, because there seems to be evidence that a counter team, just as there was a counter team in the White House between Nixon and this gang that got him out of office, there's a gang that was going to kidnap the Shah of Iran and maybe take over that turf market, the narcotics market, the opium, for coming in from Iran and Afghanistan and Turkey, because his sister and he were very much involved in a large narcotics operation. And I think that the drug problem and the Carters linked to the people involved in the drug war is very important. This is a little complicated, and I'll try to make it as clear as I can, getting into some of these points. The first point being that Henry Kissinger talked about when Nixon was going out of his zonkers and couldn't hold together, that he ran the country. Well, Kissinger's background with Rockefeller goes back to when he came here from Germany, was at Harvard, a protege of Rockefeller. They're blood brothers, and he has represented the Rockefeller, Chase Manhattan, Exxon investments all over the world as Secretary of State and head of the National Security Council. There was an article in the paper this last week, very interesting article, about a new version of the Watergate mystery man, and it's a CIA agent, Richard Ober. And the article goes on to say, it's from a quotation from a new book out by Deborah Davis called Catherine the Great, about Catherine Graham in the Washington Post. And it says, Ober, Richard Ober, was one of the few CIA men who Nixon trusted. He operated in the White House office. He had access to all classified information. He could see Nixon any time. He went in and out without signing daily logs. And Ober became a double agent in the White House, in quotes, for those who wanted the President of the United States to fall. Well, he would have to be a double agent then for Mr. David Rockefeller and Nelson Rockefeller, because when Nixon fell, as I say, Haig and Kissinger were the ones who had total control of the White House. The article says that he worked with Benjamin Bradley, who was formerly or still is with the CIA, who's the executive director of the Washington Post. They were undergraduates at Harvard University in 1944, where Kissinger was teaching at Harvard, was attended Harvard, which was a nest of CIA spies and always has been. And this article says that Ober, as a favor to Bradley, fed him stories, and he was the deep throat, and then Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein were assigned to get Nixon out of office by leaking a certain amount of the stories. The article says Ober recruited the plumbers, James McCord and the others, and he persuaded James McCord to reveal at his court arraignment that he once worked for the CIA, and McCord went up to the judge and said, I work for the CIA. And this article says that the entire Watergate story, which we all know, was a counterintelligence operation. Deep Throat was working behind the scenes for another power. And then he goes on to say in this article, this was from this week's paper, it's from Newhouse News Service, that the motive grew out of Henry Kissinger, Secretary of State, that there was a disastrous policy in Cambodia, that he was getting the blame, and the CIA, he disregarded the CIA advice, and when it failed, he blamed the CIA over in Cambodia. And that Nixon, when he appeared insane, seemed dangerous as the head of state and so forth, so for patriotic reasons, they decided, the intelligence directors, that they had to get Nixon out for patriotic reasons. So double agent Ober was feeding James McCord, who then was arrested, and McCord was the man who was supposed to have left the tape on the door, to McCord, went to the judge and broke the whole story open and began to feed. Deep Throat was feeding Woodward and Bernstein enough stories to get Richard Nixon out of office, but to make sure that Henry Kissinger and General Haig were running the White House all of this time. And in 73, as I say, when Haig and Kissinger were running the White House, David Rockefeller had selected his next president down there in Georgia. A lot of people have asked me about the Trilateral Commission. July 28, 1978, that's tape 340. I have the address of where people can get books and literature on the Trilateral Commission, so that I'm not going to do a whole tape on that now. I want to get back to the Iranian problem. But in 1973, the Trilateral Commission, that's when Nixon was having all these problems, went down and selected Jimmy Carter to represent them for the next stage of control over the White House. 1973, David Rockefeller created the Trilateral Commission, and that's when Mr. Brzezinski and his gang decided, as I say, that Jimmy Carter would be the man that would carry on for them in the next stage.